Indeed, and we've got open lines for you for another hour here on Coast to Coast AM. So get ready to let your fingers do the walking and make the phone call. Okay, here we go. Back with open lines. Another hour here. Let's go to Boston, Massachusetts. Todd's with us on the wild card line. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Great. I got a great story for you.
Okay.
When you were a kid, I know you collected comic books. Did you also collect baseball cards at all?
Yes, I sure did. And they're gone, too. I don't know where they are.
In the 80s, I was huge into baseball cards. And one day I came home, and I said, Dad, look at this book and look at these cards. And the card to have, if you're a baseball card collector, the Holy Grail was the 1952 Mickey Mantle rookie card.
It sure was. And I had one.
My father said to me, I'm going to tell you right now, I have so many cards in Nana's attic. I mean, we're from Boston, so Boston, Yankees. He goes, I will definitely have that card. Now, one recently went on eBay for $486,000.
No.
Grade 8 out of 10.
Oh.
So I said to my father, is there any way we can go retrieve the cards? And my father said, Nana's kind of weird about that. It's going to be buried in the attic. We'll get them someday. So 3 years ago, my grandmother passed away. We went to get the cards. My father had these all in shoeboxes. Like, he literally had them. He said, I have them in shoeboxes. So he had them all labeled. It went from 1951 to 1961.
Oh, my God.
So we were literally opening up a treasure chest. I'm thinking, my retirement, I'm going to pay my house off.
Everything is here.
Yes. So we're looking from the 60s, going back. All we really cared about was the 1952. That's the year the Mantle card was in. And even the commons from that year were worth $200 to $300 each, just any card. It didn't matter who the guy was.
Yeah.
So the further we go back in the years that we would notice the cards would be in worse and worse shape. My father had three Mantles, three of the Mantle rookie cards. They were bent almost beyond recognition. Now, I want to ask you, do you know what kids did back then? So I asked my father why.
Yep, we put them on bicycles.
Exactly. They put them between the spokes to hear the
noise.
With a
close wooden clothes clip.
Yeah, and imagine, I mean, they had no idea back then that they would be worth this money, but I'm thinking literally probably millions of dollars worth of cards out the window because collectors want them in great shape. If they're bent and stuff, it goes from being worth $500,000 to practically nothing.
Oh, my God.
But I heard the story a couple weeks ago, you talked about your comics, and I'm like, I got to get on and tell them my father's baseball cards.
I mean, I do not know, and my mom has checked. She claims she gave everything away. I had them all. I had baseball cards from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. I had comic books going back to the 50s, and they were in pretty good shape.
Right. And back then, you never really would have thought that it would be worth money. I mean, what did people think?
I used to buy the baseball cards for the bubble gum.
I know. Someone would have told you back then this would be worth $500,000. You would have never believed
it. I know
it. Right?
And mom was born, by the way, in Fitchburg. You know where that is, right?
What did you say? Oh, Fitchburg.
Yeah.
I live in Sturbridge, so I live about a half hour away. They call it. Do you know Fitchburg is one of the hilliest cities in the United States?
Oh, I used to walk it all the time. That's the place with the big boulder right there.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And then my cousins are from Leominster. Spent all my summers there all the time as a kid.
Yeah, do you ever get back up here?
I haven't been there in years. I need to get up there. My uncles are getting up there in age. And I had one uncle that won $8 million in the Massachusetts lottery.
Wow.
A long time ago. And he was a custodian at a school, and he stayed that. He won the money, but he kept his job. It's amazing.
They probably made him take the annuity, right? He got it over a bunch of years.
Yeah, he got it over 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. You need to do a live show up here. That would be awesome.
I got to get there. All right, Todd, thanks.
See ya.
Bye. I used to be a Red Sox fan, too. Great teams. Jim in Lincoln, Nebraska, welcome to the program. Hi, Jim.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a story for you, but first I just have to throw in this little comment. Just you guys were talking about baseball card collectibles.
Yeah.
What's the worth? Well, of course, we all have had the heartbreaking misadventure of our mothers throwing out our boxes.
I know it. If moms only realized how much they'd be worth one day.
And you think about nationwide, how many, probably billions of dollars of baseball cards there are in landfills, you know?
I mean, my one hope in life is that she'll call me one day, and she's going to be 87 the end of this month, and call me and just say, guess what I found?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, my story is, I worked in a state of Nebraska's maximum security mental hospital for 27 and a half years. And the hospital was divided into two different programs. One was for general, you know, schizophrenic, bipolar, that kind of. The other half of the building was divided into a sex offender treatment program.
Oh,
I worked
geez.
In both of them, but I worked in the sex offender treatment program for many, many years. One of the things that I, you know, that we were supposed to do was just converse with the patients and kind of get to know them, have them tell a little about themselves and all that kind of thing. And I had a guy that was telling me, he was from Norfolk, Nebraska, and he was telling me about how he was being groomed to take over as the leader of a satanic cult up there.
Whoa.
And he told me several stories of things that had happened that were the kind of thing that, you know, we're always trained to be a little skeptical of what we're hearing, you know, because you never know what they're telling you is true or not. But you know how, like, when you're having a talk with somebody and you just kind of get that sense that this is for real. He ain't BSing me here. This is the real deal. Well, I had that with this guy. The fact that he happened to kind of look the part was interesting, too. He had like a Van Dyke-type mustache, beard, chin thing, and this, like, fixing, piercing eyes when he was talking to you. He'd make eye contact with you and just, like, almost be staring at you, you know? Anyway, so he's telling me these stories, you know, and I was going like, ooh, man, okay. Well, then here's what really put a chill up my spine. Well, there was a young girl that was abducted up around the Norfolk area, too, back around the late 80s, and she was never found, I don't believe.
Oh, that's
sad. It was one of those things where there was speculation that perhaps she had been taken by Satanists, you know, or ghosts. So then, years later, this was when I was having this discussion with this guy. It was like in the mid-90s, and he tells me, "Yo, I'm from Norfolk, and I was being groomed to become the leader of this satanic cult in Norfolk," and I went, okay. Then, also, just quite by chance, on HBO at the time, they had a series on called The Thin Blue Line, and it was a story about police across the country and different things they were doing. And there was a story that was from down in Texas where they had this, a couple, I believe it was, that were under observation. And that they were, for whatever, how it had come to be that the authorities had them under observation for being Satanists, and that I think was concerned with, like, child abductions and stuff like that.
Sure.
Okay.
I would be too.
They finally busted a move on this guy's house and went there, and they had just left. I mean, it was, you know, the authorities knew that they were there.
Yeah.
And then when they finally went and got them, the house was empty. They said that in the garage they found a pentagram drawn on the wall in the garage and the makings of an altar. It wasn't set up as an altar at the time, but it was all the pieces that you would need to set up and make an altar. And some other artifacts at the time that just were, you know, pretty damning evidence that, yeah, these people were Satanists, all right.
Did they have any remnants of people shackled to the, you know, walls or stuff?
I don't know, maybe not actual people thing, but like, yeah, things like, you know, shackles and I don't know, goat heads or whatever. Just stuff that would make you think, like, you know, yeah, okay, these guys were doing this stuff.
There's got to be so many whacked out things going on in this country.
But here's the thing that put the chill up my spine. They determined that where this guy and his wife had pulled up stakes and taken off to was Norfolk, Nebraska.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, man.
There you go.
I was telling me it's true.
And I don't think these offenders can ever be rehabilitated. What do you think?
Well, you know, it breaks down into subcategories. You're completely right about a good percentage of them. They are just broke beyond repair, and some of them don't really want to change. I mean, they have no desire to. I think there are some of them that they fully get how what they did was so horrible wrong and ruination of people's lives and all that, and they really do want to not reoffend again. And so there is no cure for pedophilia. You know, you can't cure anybody of it.
No, it's
all you can do is teach them coping mechanisms to, like, have a support system that they can go to and talk to,
mm-hmm.
and things to do to, like, you know, don't go to target-rich environments like the park or the swimming pool or whatever. Don't go there. You know, don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to see temptation, and then now you're in trouble. What do? Teach them that stuff. Teach them the various things that they can do to intervene once their cycle starts rolling, and then just hope that, you know, out of say 100 of them, you might get 14 or 15 of them that will truly take that knowledge that you've given them and put it to use.
How about an electric shock treatment or something?
Yeah, that doesn't do anything other than just short term.
It doesn't, you know, work.
That, like the old thing people used to say, like, "Oh, I think they should be castrated." That doesn't do anything about it because it's in your head, not your, you know.
Yeah.
It's in your head where you have the problem, and so the castration of them really isn't going to do anything as far as short-circuiting their desire to want to go out and do what they do.
Well, yeah, but I'm convinced, as you are now, too, of course, it's difficult to rehabilitate that. Daryl writes his text in from Portland, Oregon. "My little boy is crazy about video games. I let him play them all the time, and I was wondering, since you have kids, if you think it's harming him." Well, we had some video games when my kids were growing up, but not the kind of graphics that we have today, that's for sure. I think video games are pretty good for kids in terms of really polishes up their brain and dexterity, you know, because they're playing around with those little clickers and they're doing their gizmos. But I would be very careful with the type of video game. I wouldn't want them to be playing the type, you know, have the fun stuff where people aren't getting shot and killed and things like that. That's what you got to make sure you get rid of. Let's go to Nicole in Reno, Nevada. You're becoming a regular, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
I know. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. What's going on in Reno?
It's beautiful weather.
You ever get down to Vegas?
No. Who wants anything to do with Vegas? I live in northern Nevada. It's nice up here.
So you were born up there, I guess, right?
I was born in Reno. I've kind of lived all over.
Yeah.
But I was calling in regards to, I lived in Bridgeport, California for quite a few years.
You sound like you have the sniffles.
I do. I've been sick for a week and a half.
Poor girl.
But I lived in a hotel in Bridgeport, California, in a desolate area of California, in a ghost town. And living in this hotel, I could write a book on the stories.
How long did you live in this hotel?
Off and on for 4 years.
Jeez. Why'd you live there? Because you...
I worked there seasonally, so when I came to town early, I would have to stay in the hotel until, you know, living quarters became available.
They let you live for free?
Well, the owner of the restaurant that I worked for also owned the hotel. So, yes, it was free when I lived there until suitable living quarters became available.
All right.
But this hotel supposedly came down from Bodie, California on logs and was placed where it sat.
They moved this whole thing, huh? They rolled it in.
That's the story.
Is it haunted?
It's completely haunted. Absolutely, undeniably haunted.
Did you ever see anything when you were out there?
I debated while I was on hold which story I would tell. So this is the story I chose. The owner and I were staying in this hotel getting ready to open it up, open up the restaurant, open up the hotel,
mm-hmm.
because we sit next door to each other. And her and I lost communication on one weekend, and she left town without telling me and left me alone in this hotel. She'd recently replaced all of the windows in the hotel, so they didn't rattle anymore.
Okay.
They were brand new hotel windows. She had done amazing renovations, and I didn't realize she'd left. She didn't tell me. She was upset with me at the moment. And then once I realize I'm alone in the hotel, all the windows start rattling.
Uh-oh.
The brand new windows.
That are never supposed to rattle are rattling.
No, there's no reason those windows should be rattling.
Who's haunting the place?
There's a lot of stories about this hotel. Brides jumping out of windows,
oh,
horrible things.
Brides jumping horrible. Out of windows like they had a horrible
yeah.
honeymoon or something?
Just horrible stories. It's unbelievable. So I decide I'm going to ignore the rattling windows. I'm going to lay down and go to sleep. And I feel people sitting on the end of my bed.
Oh.
I feel body weight.
But nobody's there, obviously, right?
Not on my chest. No, no one's in the whole place. I have 100 stories for the good 6 months combined.
Yeah.
I lived in this hotel. Bodies are sitting.
That's definitely a haunted place, Nicole. You always be careful. Don't go back there anymore. Don't go back there. You don't need it. Hey, this text then from Christina in Slidell, Louisiana. Why do you think people have their demons? Is it a chemical imbalance or just really part of life and our body chemistries? No. I don't think it has anything to do with chemical imbalances or body chemistries. I think demons are real. I think they're real. They attach themselves to certain people and they do not let go. No, there's no question there's some people who have this chemical imbalance, as you say, that they may be strange and they think they see demons. They're just making it up in their head. But I think demons overall are the real deal, for sure. Hey, we're going to come back in a moment, wrap things up with final phone calls. So if you haven't gotten on yet or you're ready to, make the call right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. We're approaching 400,000 members for that. Go ahead, do that, and then follow us on Twitter. George Ure will be one of our guests tomorrow as we talk about some trends for the future, and he's got it all put together for us, so make sure you're part of the program. And then Friday, Dan Rather, that's right, former CBS newsman, will be my guest for a couple hours before we go into open lines. Okay, welcome back to our final segment of Open Lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to the text message from Sean in Massachusetts. I went to the Lizzie Borden house last weekend, which, by the way, is in Massachusetts, and that place has true demons. Have you ever been to a place like that, a place where the vibe is just plain evil? I have not been to anything specific or organized, Sean, that you could say was pure evil. But I have been in some general spots where you felt that. And it's not a very comfortable feeling at all. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Tina's with us. It's the home of Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. Hi, Tina. Have you ever seen Billy out there? Tina?
I'm here. I'm sorry.
Oh, there you are. Woo! I was 2 seconds away from disconnecting you.
Oh, don't disconnect me. I've never seen Billy, but that would be cool. That would be cool.
He's out there somewhere. They're touring right now, I think.
Oh, anyway. Really? Okay.
Anyways, what's going on?
Well, I want to ask your opinion about something before
okay.
I tell you my story. I want to know what you think about the where they're spraying, you know, they're spraying in the air. Do you think
chemtrails?
The chemtrails, right? Do you think that Prince was targeted? Do you think there's any possibility that he was targeted for publicly exposing that?
Who?
The musician Prince, the artist.
Oh no, I don't think so. I don't think that. I think Prince, sadly, had an addiction, and the addiction killed him. And, you know, addictions come in different forms, don't they? You know, people are compulsive. They have little. I've got a hang up. I've got a hang up about burned out light bulbs. I mean, a real hang up about it. To me, a burned out light bulb tells you that there's some deficiency somewhere in the organization, in the restaurant, in whatever. And so I want them replaced. I mean, I kind of like freak out. It's kind of weird about that. But in Prince's case, no, I don't think he was killed or anything like that. I think that he had an addiction, and that addiction killed him. The body can only take so much, folks. You can't pelt it with those kinds of pain pills and junk like that. It just won't take it. The heart can't take it. Justin in Seattle, Washington, Wildcard Line. Justin, it's your turn.
Hey, George. First-time caller. Well, honestly, an honor and pleasure to be with you tonight, sir.
I'm glad you got in.
Thank you. Well, a caller a couple back kind of recently touched on it, but the topic tonight kind of struck a chord, to say the least, being demonic possession and whatnot. I've worked in a correctional setting and also on the streets within law enforcement capacity in Washington State. I won't really get into the counties or facilities for reason, but I don't want to speak for all of the people that work in that setting, but I can tell you that there's some things that happen in those settings that that really honestly can't be explained by you know, science or medicine, mm-hmm. or psychologists. I think one of the primary stories that comes to mind that has definitely left a lasting impression has been a case where you witness a gentleman and he's banging his head repeatedly against a steel door, breaks off a chunk of his skull, and shoves feces in his brain, and
yeah.
And you know, those things can't be explained by medicine, George, and when they're straight faced and you encounter these things on a daily basis.
That's got to break you down, doesn't it?
Sure, sure. And I can tell you, there's some other cases. One other that comes to mind is a pretty significant serial killer in Washington State. I won't name his name because he very well might be listening.
Probably is. We have a huge prison listenership.
Okay.
Hi, folks.
But I can tell you, George, that there's things about people like that, you know, especially when you go to the cuff port, you let the cuff port down, and there's a drop of blood, you know, and you see blood all the time. You see feces. You see a guy break out his dentures and cut down his calf, pull out a chunk of his muscle and throw it at the window, at the cell door.
Aren't they in pain when they do that?
Well, you'd think so, right, George?
Yeah.
And so you'd call in the nurse and call in the psychologist and spend whatever money to get treatment needed. But they're straight-faced.
Hey.
And when they tear up the Bible in front of your face and do these things, the only thing that you're left with when you're walking away at the end of the day, for sure, is that there's got to be something else going on. Got to be something else.
Deeper.
Yes, sir.
Much deeper. Hey, thank you for sharing that. I mean, what a horrible situation. What a horrible job you'd have to do for that. Final text of the night from Tracy in Florida. I heard that caller talking about the Mickey Mantle baseball card. If your mom found it for you, would you sell it and split the money with her? Well, this is what I would do. Mom, you're out of luck. No, I would sell the Mickey Mantle card. I would give my kids most of the proceeds. And I would make sure that if mom needed anything, she really doesn't. But if she needed anything, she'd get it, to be sure. She'd be taken care of. But I would definitely sell it. You know, who wants to hold on to it? You find something like that after thinking it's gone. Found riches, as far as I'm concerned. Take advantage of that. Let's go to Alexander, truck driving in Pennsylvania on the wild card line. Hey, Alex, go ahead.
How you doing, Mr. Norrie?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Hey, wonderful to speak with you, first time caller. I was calling all night and I finally got in, so that's fun.
Super.
I got a demon story for you.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, you familiar with St. Augustine, Florida?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Well, I was born and raised there, 18 years. A good hangout spot is downtown, you know, all the historic spots, you know, there's always graveyards and whatnot, so there's haunting stories and whatnot. However, the story I'm telling, I was hanging out downtown. I think it was a Saturday, and it was broad daylight, probably noon. Walking around, I was close to the city gates, which is, you know, it's near the fort. And all of a sudden, I hear this scream, and I look over to my left, and I was just about to walk over to the right and continue down the street, and I see a group of maybe 25 people. Surrounding this female, Hispanic, maybe, you know, 20 years old, maybe younger. And she's just laying out on the ground. And I'm looking around, like, what happened? You know, I didn't see anybody trip her, nothing happened. But then I notice in the crowd, there's this extremely tall man. And I don't mean, like, you know, just tall and lanky. I mean, he was large as well, you know?
Yeah. Almost out of place.
Yeah, exactly. And even more out of place was the rest of his, you know, appearance. He was large, like I said. He seemed, you know, older because he had, you know, white hair. It was short, you know. It wasn't, you know, it was cropped up, you know, not a crew cut, but it wasn't down to his shoulders. And he seemed to have these, like, I want to say, like, burn marks on his face. It wasn't like normal burns, though. It literally looked like flames.
Hmm.
And this guy was just intently staring at the female on the ground and just continued to stare. I'm looking at him, and I'm just getting this really, really creepy feeling. And remember, it's, you know, broad daylight out, you know.
Right.
There's plenty of people around, and all of a sudden, I'm just like, I need to leave. And so I just turned. I keep walking the way I was going to go, and then probably about, you know, 10 feet, 15 feet after that, I start to get a little bit of a jog going.
feet don't fail me now.
Exactly. Met up with my friends, told them the story, and we came back maybe 20 minutes later. Everybody was gone. Just don't know what happened, but that was pretty creepy.
And the friends believed the story?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was with my girlfriend at the time, wife now, and she's kind of a paranormal magnet.
Yeah.
I've got plenty of other experiences, you know. Never really had too much happen when I was a kid, but, you know, once I got with her, it's, you know, all the time.
I love it. Hey, thanks. Appreciate your call. Sammy, truck driving in California, is with us. Hi, Sammy. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure thing.
Try and make it short. I got a lot of stories. I got an abduction story, too, I'd like to tell you sometime. But back home, I was with a bunch of friends, and we were hanging out and everything, and then we went to my one buddy's place, and we it was late, and we crashed out in the living room. I was on the floor, and a couple others were on the floor, and the one that lived there, he was on the couch, and his mom was in the room, and she was a white witch, which I didn't really know much about that at the time. But so the lights was out, and we were laying there, and I went, I dozed off, went to sleep, and all of a sudden, later on, I don't know what time it was or anything, but something was on my back because I was laying down face first. Something was on my back and pushing down on my shoulders and laughing like like an old woman, you know.
Oh, jeez.
And I mean,
creepy.
I couldn't get up or nothing, and I was trying to get up and everything, and when I finally could get up, when it was gone, I started cussing my buddies and everything. I said, "Whatever ones you've done now, I'm gonna kick your butt," you know, and it was really something. That we didn't do it. We didn't do nothing. What are you talking about? They didn't even know what I was talking about. And then the next morning, when we were down there eating breakfast, his mom told me that used to be the Underground Railroad. That house was part of the Underground Railroad.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
There it is.
Well, yeah, and she said that, you know, I found out she was a white witch. That's when we all found out.
She probably summoned those spirits up.
Probably. And so she told us that, and she said there's one, she's an old black woman, and she used to be there a lot helping, she said that was probably her.
She died, just never wanted to leave at all. Time for one or two more calls, so let's go to Raymond in Fresno, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Raymond. Welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Great.
Good. George, we're so much alike, from the belt buckle to our mother's age. My Gemini friend. Yeah, two things I'll do it quick. And first of all, the amazing thing about Frank Sinatra, he had a memory that was unbelievable. And I met him, and he came to our show in Atlantic City. And I met him, and then about 2 months later, I saw him again in Vegas.
Oh, he had magic, didn't he?
Yeah, and he remembered my name is what blew me
away. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And one more thing, George, I would love to hear you sing. I would love to hear your voice. Okay. But anyway, the story.
Got to come to one of my events somewhere.
Yeah.
Fly to St. Louis. I'm doing it June 18th.
You never come to the West Coast, huh?
Oh no, I'm on the West Coast a lot, but we haven't had a event. I think Tom is going to put one together. We've not had a stage show event yet, but we should. I think it would be huge.
Oh man, I'd love to hear you sing. But now, George, do you remember the story I was telling you about the Ouija board? My wife and her friends messing with that Ouija board.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Remember I told you it followed us to Lake Oswego, Oregon?
That's right.
Okay. Well, my wife and I, we would get off about 4 o'clock in the morning, and on the weekends we would just lay. We had a two-story, and we would just lay in the living room and just watch TV and eat and all kind of stuff. Well, that there was a ghost up in the music room, turning tapers and everything. The doors were slamming, and my wife would be sleeping, tossing and turning. And I would go upstairs with my .38 because I didn't know what was up. Yeah. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, her and I were having a really that ghost destroyed our marriage. Her and I were up in the music room floor, just crying at that time. It was just so bad, you know. And she says, look up in the window. And George, we look up in the window, and now we're two stories up. There was a face imprinted in the window from the outside. And the papers were turning in the music room and everything. It messed up my music room. And anyway, make a long story short, we got out of there. But that's where I first saw my first UFO, and I'll tell you that story when I call you again.
All right, you got it. Hey, Raymond, thank you so much. And the clock has got us. I like these midweek open lines. We normally do them on a Tuesday or a Wednesday for a couple of hours. And then, of course, we always have our Friday open lines, which we're going to have after Dan Rather is on with us for a couple hours. I'm looking forward to that. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.